Can I make an MP3?
Welcome to South by Southwest 2003. This is quite a turnout for the topic of copyrights. Largely, the turnout, I'm sure, can be attributed to this man right here, Larry Lessig. My name is Eric Helwig. I'm a writer, and it's actually a great honor to be able to introduce Larry. And actually, this might be one of the last times we ever get a chance to see Larry, because he's flying to Disney World this evening to give a speech at a conference, and we're not quite sure what's going to happen there. The facial recognition technology has made its way to their entranceway. We're not sure we'll ever see him again, so everybody take this. But it is actually very heartening to see this kind of a turnout. On this topic, I was reminded of a panel that I was on at Harvard in the year 2000, digital music conference, and we were talking obviously about Napster and those kinds of things. And they had a Harvard professor on the panel who was talking about copyrights, and it seemed that whenever the discussion went to him or if he tried to get his point in, people's eyes just tended to glaze over, and they just couldn't really grasp. They knew they really should be interested in it, but they just couldn't really grasp what he was talking about, and let's talk about Napster, that's really cool. But obviously, just in these last 3 years, a lot has changed. And as evidenced in the attendance here today, the copyrights have moved to the fore, especially for this group, artists, musicians, technologists. And obviously, March 2003 is kind of an uneasy time for all of us, that the world appears, you know, on the edge of a war. But actually, whether we know it or not, this room, people in this room, have been at war for a number of years now when it comes to the terms of copyright and technology. And creative control. A lot of us, most of us, I would wager, are probably unknowing or unaware of the fact that there's been a big battle going on. But in fact, for most of us, it's truly the biggest battle in our livelihoods that is happening in the 21st century. And one man has really led that charge and helped to rally people's interests in the cause and make them aware of just how dire the situation is. And, you know, that man is Larry Lessig. He's really thus far dedicated his life to inform us of what's going on, to rally us around the cause, and to fight to enact the kind of change that is necessary in this area. He's written a couple books. First was Code, more recently The Future of Ideas, and he's tirelessly and constantly crisscrossing the globe to bring his ideas and his message to people. And there just aren't enough hours in the day and days in the year to present that message to people. Of course, the cause, as we're all aware, came to a head last year with the Eldred Supreme Court decision, which we lost, if I can speak in the collective we. And the loss, of course, was a crushing blow to the cause of copyright reform and to Larry personally. But if I can quote my mother, and that is that something good comes of everything. And I think that Larry here is kind of realizing that as well. And I was speaking with a friend of his, Bob Young, who was one of the founders of Red Hat Linux the other day for another story I was working on. We got to talking about Larry. As often it happens when you start talking to people about just about anything as it weaves back into copyrights and controls, the name Lessig comes up quite often. But Bob said something that I will share with you. He said that winning or losing, speaking specifically of the Eldred decision, Larry was able to make it part of the copyright battle part of the public consciousness. You know, the story got onto the front page of the New York Times, which probably wouldn't have happened perhaps without Lessig. And in that sense, even though they lost the case, and it will make the battle much more difficult, it was actually a big win. And of course, that's cold comfort for Larry. But now, actually, it was a watershed event, and that the battle is now hopefully coming to more of us, and that we can take up, you know, arms, if you will, or take up the cause of enacting copyright reform. And it's actually up to us to pick up this fight, that we need to pick up where Larry is bringing us and walking the walk and actually talking the talk and making it happen. We need to make our opinions known. You know, we need to organize, we need to blog, we need to vote on this record. And without taking up too much more of this valuable time, and again on this eve of where we don't really know what's going to happen to him tomorrow, gives me great pleasure to introduce Stanford Press Professor Larry Lessig.
So last month, in February,
this man, Jack Valentin, appeared at the Duke Law School and gave a lecture. We could call it a sermon. In this lecture, Jack told the students at the Duke Law School about morality. Here's what he said. No free democratic nation can lay claim to greatness unless it has constructed a platform from which springs a moral compact that guides the daily conduct of the society and inspires the society to believe in civic trust. That moral imperative connects to every family, to every business, every university, every profession, and to government as well. It is defined by what William Faulkner called the old verities, the world that define what this free and loving land is all about. Words like duty, service, honor, integrity, pity, pride, compassion, and sacrifice. These values, Jack said, are corrupted. They are corrupted, first, he said, by the Enrons of our society, which are teaching our children that the strongest leaders of our society think first not about these values, but about how to make money for themselves. But second, he then said, these values were being corrupted by sharing. By file sharing. By the terrorists, as he's called them in other contexts, these are our children, the terrorists who are using the technology of the internet to share content. This environment, Jack says, has, quote, infected our society, induced a kind of moral decay that we must fight. This, he said, must change for, and my favorite quote, man is the only animal, Jack from Washington informed us, who understands the differences between the way things are and the way things ought to be. 1998 was going to be a great year. In 1998, work from 1923 was going to pass into the public domain 75 years after it was created. 75 years is a puzzling number for this work from 1923 because in 1923, the maximum copyright available was 56 years. You got that in 2 bytes, 28 years, and if you renewed, 28 more years. 85% of the people who got copyrights in 1923 didn't renew their copyright, which means that the average term for work from 1923 was just about 32 years. But 75 years was the term granted for those who renewed because in 1976, Congress extended the term of existing copyrights by 19 years. Now, this was nothing new. Starting in 1962, Congress has extended the term of existing copyrights, and until 76, extended it 10 times. Each time Congress extended the term of existing copyrights, it was effectively tolling the passage of work into the public domain. By 1998, there were only 3 years out of 36 where work passed into the public domain free of these extensions. 1998 was to be another great year. Famous works would pass into the public domain. Works, some works of Gershwin, of Robert Frost, of James Joyce, and a bunch of not so famous works. In fact, of all the work that was produced in 1923, in 1998, no more than 2% was commercially exploited. The rest of that work sat invisibly in this space. Invisibly because it was not anymore produced by the commercial publishing system. 1930 is another useful year for this. In 1930, there are 10,027 books published. 174 of those were in print in 1998. 9,853 books then sat out of print in 1998 sat available for people to potentially reuse if they could freely get access to that work, but they couldn't get access to that work or work from 1923 because the copyright system continued its control, even though there was no continuing commercial exploitation of this work at all. Between the years 1923 and 1946, 97.7% of all books published are now not commercially available from their publishers. 93.2% of all films created are no longer commercially available from their commercial publishers. But all of this work, whether commercially exploited or not, remains locked up by the copyright system. The commercial publishers thereby give us basically 10% of what was produced then. 90% is commercially gone. 1998 would change that. Because in 1998, this work would pass into the public domain, and this problem of access could heal itself. Because when work passed into the public domain, this space which we could think of usefully and ought to think of as a lawyer-free zone, this work could then be exploited by others who would take it and build upon it by redistributing it or updating it through derivative works, playwrights. Came to us to describe works that they had written plays for that they were not permitted to perform, could now perform these works once the works from 1923 passed into the public domain. Archivists such as Brewster Kahle's Internet Archive wants to expand to cover books, could take these works that were not anymore published and make them available for free on the internet once they passed into the public domain. Researchers, for example, one who had spent 15 years of her life working on a story about Joyce that she knew she could not publish. If this work continued to be under copyright, because the Joyce estate is a famous abuser of the copyright privilege and would sue her rather than allow this work to be published. That work could be published once this passed into the public domain, and music companies outlined thousands of titles that they would make available through sheet music and recordings at a fraction of the cost that they were made available before, because public domain would lower the cost of producing. And finally, a father, a man named Eric Eldred, who had for the past 5 years been developing and deploying public domain works on his website because his daughters were bored by English. And he thought, being a geek himself, if I made it alive through HTML and links, maybe they'd be interested in these works. They weren't. But many others were. And he began this career of building works in the public domain on the internet in HTML form. He, like the Project Gutenberg that Michael Hart started 20 years before, spreading knowledge for works that were otherwise not easily available, giving people new ways to build upon that work. All of this would happen in 1998 as work passed into the public domain. They were building from the work in the public domain, the way our framers intended when they wrote this part of the Constitution that has now been erased, that copyrights are for a limited time. Now, this is nothing new, this process of building on works that are in the public domain. My favorite hero in this story, in 1928, did exactly this. My hero, Walt, who I hope to see something of tomorrow, in 1928 created this heroic character, Steamboat Willie. Steamboat Willie, of course, inspired through the synchronization with music, a new form of creativity in cartoons that gave birth to Mickey Mouse. So from Steamboat Willie, we got Mickey Mouse. From Mickey Mouse, we got the Disney empire. But what you don't likely know that is in 1928, there was another bit of creativity out there. This man, Buster Keaton, produced this film, Steamboat Bill Jr. Steamboat Bill Jr. was explicitly ripped by Walt when he made Steamboat Willie. Here's the script for Steamboat Bill. It opens in the main title. Orchestra starts playing opening verses of Steamboat Bill in the creation of this Steamboat Willie. From Steamboat Bill, we got Steamboat Willie. From Willie, we got Mickey Mouse. From Mickey Mouse, the Disney Corporation. This is creativity. It's a creativity we should embrace and praise. You could call it a Disney creativity, but I mean a Walt Disney creativity. It's the kind of creativity that takes and builds on what went before. It's a brilliant form of cultural expression, and he was free to express himself in exactly this way. This was the birth of the cut and paste culture that we here live every day, this rip, mix, and burn culture that the Apple Corporation sells us. This was his way of doing business. Disney always parodied the feature-length mainstream films around him, and more than parodying existing films, his whole empire is built upon works that were, at the time, in the public domain. Most recently, this horrible adaptation. We should call this Walt Disney creativity, and we should praise it. We should recognize it in everything we do all the time. It's the way we create. We take and we express differently. We parrot, we change, we improve, we embrace this freedom to take, change, and release. Rip, mix, burn. This is the expression of what free culture is about. He had that freedom, so too should we. But we don't. For 1998, 4 years before this creature would be set free, Congress passed the Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act, which extended for 20 years copyrights for existing works. This then was the 11th time Congress had extended the word for existing works, tolling the public domain for 20 more years. You have to keep this in context. In the next 20 years, 1 million patents will enter the public domain. Not one copyright will enter the public domain through the expiration of copyright. Though just 2% have a commercial value, and thus this extension will enable that 2% to make more money and exercise more control, the rest of this content that playwrights and archivists, musicians and Eldred would build upon remains under the control of copyright for 20 years. Whether exploited or not, it remains under this system's control. 20 more years to wait to release this content, which was built in the expectation that copyrights would expire. We want to put together a story, a film, of the number of people who have come to us to tell us their story, of writing creative work, building on work that should have passed into the public domain in reliance upon the promise that copyright would expire, and for 20 years can do nothing with this work. Now they say something was stolen from them. They say something was stolen from us. That in this bargain that was struck for 56 years and then for 75 years with copyright owners, this exchange of 75 years of protection in exchange for creating something new, this promise has been broken, they say, because this work that was to pass into the public domain now won't. They